welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, September 21st. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. First, let's take a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. Today, we're expecting a mostly sunny day with winds from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. And Cedar Rapids will see a high of 76, 77 in Iowa City, and then falling to a low tonight of 53 in Cedar Rapids and 54 in Iowa City. Sunset tonight is at 7:06 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow at 6:54 a.m. for a total daylight period of 12 hours and 13 minutes. And now from the front page of today's Gazette, delayed by derecho, Cedar Rapids school starts. An article by Grace King of the Gazette staff. Stacy Yonda is welcoming 10 first grade students today to Madison Elementary School for the first day of school in the Cedar Rapids Community School District. For the first time in about 6 months, students will walk the hallways, this time wearing masks and social distancing as a part of coronavirus precautions. On the floor of the hallway are decals that tell students which direction to walk to avoid close contact with others. The district's first day of school was delayed about a month from the original August 24 after the August 10 derecho damaged every school building in the Cedar Rapids system. The district received forgiveness of required instructional days from the Iowa Department of Education and will maintain the last day of school this academic year as June 1, 2021. Yonda has ordered books to read to our students to help facilitate conversations about the coronavirus pandemic. Some families feel like it's a hoax, she said. While masks are required for students in school buildings, Yonda plans to let her students take mask breaks at their desks if they need it. But she also plans to model good behavior herself by wearing a face mask and a face shield in the classroom. She wants to make sure students feel safe and comfortable, she said, as some parents may not be masks wearers. I want them to not be freaked out, she said. Kids are very adaptive and will learn a new normal. Their kindergarten year was cut short, so they haven't had too much school yet to have formed a habit. Sarah Wright, another first grade teacher at Madison Elementary, is teaching almost 40 students online from an empty classroom. Her students are spread out across three different elementary schools. While Wright wanted to teach in person, teachers with more seniority chose to teach in person, and she was asked to teach online. She will teach half of the first grade class synchronously in the morning and the other half synchronously in the afternoon for about three-hour blocks of time. I have no words, Wright said. I'm terrified but excited. I cannot wait to meet the kids and get to know them. Wright has been studying pictures of her students to try to put faces to names. She's worried it will be difficult for them to learn how to use their Chromebooks and log on to an online class. They're little kids who have maybe never used a Chromebook before, she said. Over 50% of Cedar Rapids students are enrolled in in-person learning. 26% are enrolled in temporary remote learning, and almost 8%, or 1,000 students, chose the Cedar Rapids Virtual Academy. High school students will start the year online only. The high school buildings, Kennedy, Jefferson, and Washington, as well as Taft Middle School, are under construction to repair damage caused by the derecho. The buildings are expected to be open for students by January 4. All 21 elementary schools, as well as Roosevelt, Wilson, and Harding Middle Schools, Polk Alternative Education Center, Metro High School, and the Educational Leadership and Support Center, are repaired at 75% capacity and will be occupied. Franklin and McKinley Middle Schools likely will be ready for students by November 16. Classroom cohorts will be about 20 students for in-person learning. Temporary virtual classrooms are larger, with about 30 to 40 students per class. But teachers are dividing instructional time between morning and afternoon students. Students enrolled in schools where in-person instruction is not available, can attend a hub where internet and academic help will be available. The hubs are intended for students at Kennedy, Jefferson, Washington, McKinley, Franklin, and Taft, and are open from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. weekdays. They will be supervised by general education paraprofessionals. The hubs are the Jane Boyd Center, Paul Engels Center, Affordable Housing Network, Four Oaks, First Lutheran Church, the Cedar Rapids Public Library, and the Salvation Army Community Center. See the district's website at cr.k12.ia.us for more details. Schools will be sanitized as much as possible throughout the school day and disinfected in the evenings. Custodial and grounds manager Matt Dunbar said the additional sanitizing procedures are costing about $80,000. Anxiety is high. People are concerned, and we're doing everything we possibly can to make it a safe environment for staff and students, Dunbar said. Also from the front page today, derecho is a blessing and a curse for area pets. Four kittens find home, but Violet is still missing. An article by Kat Russell of the Gazette staff. For four little kittens, last month's devastating derecho paved the way for them to find a home. Molly Rokarek and her four children were outside playing August 10 at their Mount Vernon home when the sky went dark. Having received word from a friend in Des Moines and a phone-in warning from her husband that a bad storm was approaching, Rokarek hurried her children, ages 7 and 5, plus 3-year-old twins, into the house and down to the basement. When the storm finally cleared, damage wasn't all the family found outside. It was the night after the storm, and we found these two kittens, one male and one female, she said. They were just wandering around behind our shop, and then, the day after the storm, they came onto our patio and just started following us all over. The kids were instantly smitten, Rokarek said, and it was obvious the animals needed care. They both had mites and lice, she said, and the female had an infection that made her sneeze, and her eyes were goopy. All were things that could be fixed with antibiotics, vaccinations, and a little love. The kids loved them right away, and I couldn't imagine making them give the kittens up, Rokarek said. But two kittens were not enough for four kids. The kids were fighting over the kittens, so we decided we need to adopt two more, so each kid could have their own, she said. The two kittens that were found in the storm were dubbed Tinker Bell and Flash. Their adopted siblings were named Periwinkle and Bowser. For these four kittens, the storm could be considered a blessing. But for other pet owners, the storm downed fences and broke windows, making it easy for their panicked pets to escape. According to Ronnie Schlabs, director of the Cedar Rapids Animal Care and Control and Care Center, the shelter took in 24 dogs in the 2 weeks after the storm. That's nearly double the 13 dogs that were taken in 2 weeks before. Several area animal rescue groups, including Last Hope Animal Rescue and Fur Fun Rescue, said they didn't see a surge of displaced animals after the storm. Of those dogs that found themselves in the hands of Cedar Rapids Animal Care and Control, 18 were returned to their owners. Two were adopted, and two went to other rescues, one of which was injured in the storm. Additionally, 33 cats were taken in following the storm, 12 of which remain at the shelter. A lot of people showed up at the shelter after the storm looking for their animals, Schlabs said. In many cases, we were able to unite them that way. But in some cases, it was the animal's microchip that enabled us to find their owners. Unfortunately, not all the missing animals have found their way home. Tempted by all the open windows, Violet, the cat, pushed through a screen that day after the storm and hasn't been seen since. Violet is a black and white tuxedo cat who lives indoors and is typically skittish around humans. But she loves our children, owner Leslie Marquez said. She's the children's cat. Marquez said in a Facebook post asking people in the Marion area where the family lives to be on the lookout. The kids are devastated after all that has happened. Marquez said the family has done all the things pet owners would normally do when a pet gets lost: put up signs, post in Facebook groups, and check with shelters and rescues. Violet was nowhere to be found. "We didn't know what the heck to do," Marquez said. "This has never happened to us before. We put out her favorite bed, food, and water, and slept in the living room with the front door open so we could hear her if she showed up. At one point, she did show up, but she ran away when my husband called to her. That's when the family decided to put out a trap, hoping to catch the elusive feline. Instead, they ended up catching more than they bargained for. First, they caught a feral cat they initially mistook for Violet. That mistake was realized once they let the cat loose in the house. It took days to catch it and remove it again. Next, they caught a possum. That's when we decided to give up on the traps and decided to just wait and hope she comes back," Marquez said. "It breaks my heart for the kids, though. They are all so saddened. My four-year-old keeps asking why Violet doesn't like them anymore, his thinking being that she left them because she doesn't like them." And from the Iowa Today section, more virus news. Iowa tops 80,000 virus cases. New cases rise among school-age kids in the state. As students head back to Iowa schools, the number of children aged 17 and under who test positive for COVID-19 has grown by 411 in the last 3 days, according to public health data released Sunday morning. The increase brings the statewide total for that age group to 6,380. While younger children appear to be less vulnerable to complications from the infection, public health officials have expressed concern they could spread the disease to people who are, such as teachers and older family members. The number of people in education as an occupation who have tested positive grew by 254 in the same 3 days, for a total of 3,080, the data shows. Iowa surpassed having 80,000 total COVID-19 cases in the last 6 months, with the addition of 874 new cases in the 24-hour period that ended at 11 a.m. Sunday. The new total is 80,010. The state also reported one additional death in the period due to the coronavirus, one person in Linn County. That brings the total deaths in Iowa related to the disease to 1,265, of which now 106 have been in Linn County. On Friday, Governor Kim Reynolds extended her order keeping bars closed in the university communities of Johnson and Story counties, where cases surged as students returned to campus and crowded bars last month. Both counties remain in the 10 Iowa counties with the most cases, but Johnson County added only 22 and Story added only 15 cases in the period. Statewide, hospitalizations because of the virus inched down across the board. Hospitalizations were down from 282 to 269. Those in intensive care decreased from 81 to 73. And those on ventilators to help breathe declined from 40 to 38 in the 24-hour period. Here are the 10 Iowa counties that have reported the most COVID-19 cases so far. First is Polk County at 15,273, and next Johnson County at 4,989. Woodbury County is third at 4,954. Blackhawk County at 4,339. Linn County at 3,765. Story County at 3,280. Dubuque County at 2,773. Scott County at 2,768, and Dallas County, 2,680, and lastly, Pottawatomie County at 1,991. And today from the editorial page, we have a guest column by Norman Sherman. Mr. Sherman is from Coralville and has worked extensively in politics, including as Vice President Hubert Humphrey's press secretary and he has authored a memoir entitled From Nowhere to Somewhere. Mr. Sherman's article today is entitled Claims of Voter Fraud Are False. What do you get when you combine a soapbox with a ballot box? If President Donald Trump is on the soapbox, you get a coffin for our electoral process. He proclaims without a bit of evidence that election fraud is very, very common. That is more than casual nonsense. It destroys trust in how office holders got there. Fortunately, our democracy will withstand the endless bludgeoning by Trump. Most of us know nothing is more essential for our democracy than the confidence we have in the process and the results, even if our commander-in-chief hasn't a clue. It is what makes America great and different from Russia, China, or North Korea. When Trump attacks the integrity of our elections, he stamps cheat not only on millions who vote legitimately, but beyond that, he implicitly demeans the 3,141 county auditors in the country, many of whom are Republicans. They have devoted themselves to keeping our elections honest. That includes 99 auditors here in Iowa. Would that Senators Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley overcome their enabling silence and try instead to stop the president from spewing phony charges? Trump talks of massive fraud as if he were living in the 19th or early 20th century when it did exist. Tom Pendergast in Kansas City was guilty of voter fraud, stealing municipal funds, not paying federal taxes. He was sentenced to 15 months in federal prison. William Vare, a Republican, stole millions in Philadelphia. He didn't go to prison nor to the U.S. Senate when elected. Instead, they investigated and described his massive corruption. Today, almost 100 years later, we don't have that corruption despite what Trump says. His claims are fatuous. He has charged, for example, that Hillary Clinton received millions of illegitimate votes, yet no one has been charged with that federal crime in his 4 years when they could have been. Trump blathers on about 1.8 million deceased still on voter rolls, some after 10 years. They really don't send in absentee ballots. There is no evidence that there has been a single ghost vote. The president must have been listening with approval to a recent call in Cedar Rapids. Dear, your mother just died. Please call Joel Miller's office and get her name off the voters list, and then, after calming down, call All Saints about her memorial service. The Conservative Heritage Foundation has studied elections going back to 1972. Out of millions of votes cast over the decades, it found 1,296 cases of illegitimate ballots with 1,120 convictions. In South Carolina, in a recent election, 207 cases of suspected fraud were identified and investigated. All turned out to be illegitimate, suspect mostly as the result of clerical error or mistaken data. There was not a single case of voter fraud. Mail-in ballots are the rule in many foreign countries. In Switzerland, 90% of ballots are cast that way. In 5 states in our own country, mail-in ballots are the rule. No widespread corruption. Why would anyone on a soapbox shout rigged unless he feared losing, forced out of his bedroom and off his box? Winners don't whine. A column by Norman Sherman, who is an author from Coralville. And we have 2 letters to the editor today. The first comes from Maya Sims of Iowa City. This letter is entitled Transit Changes Needed in Johnson County. To the residents of Johnson County, the transit system in our community is failing to meet the needs of many who use the services. CAMBUS, Iowa City Transit, and Coralville Transit all took part in the Iowa City Area Transit Study this year. Changes based on the results of that study will be going into action by the end of the year. Because the Community Transportation Committee is committed to expanding inclusive and affordable transit, we want them to include 2 very important changes. First, all bus passes must be made universal, as enabled to work on both Coralville and Iowa City buses. To keep the status quo, in which only the most expensive pass works on both systems, is to keep people with low incomes from easy access to the entire community. Second, bus service must be extended to midnight and Sundays. Second shift and Sunday workers deserve the same bus service that weekday 9-to-5 workers do. Please join us in advocating for second shift and Sunday workers by encouraging our elected officials to do what is right and implement these two very important policy changes. And that letter by Maya Sims of Iowa City. And the last letter, it comes from Ashley Hinson of Marion. And her letter is entitled, "In Congress, I'll Follow Grassley's Gold Standard." As the Gazette reported recently, Senator Chuck Grassley has officially finished 40 years of meetings in every county every year since his election to the Senate. "If elected to Congress, I will make multiple visits to every county in the district every year." Senator Grassley has set the gold standard for American representative government, even if his political opponents don't want to admit it. "There's no reason to make accessibility and accountability a partisan issue, and Grassley's critics should think twice before taking swipes at a tradition that's fundamentally improved how we do politics in Iowa. Bemoaning a lack of access to Senator Grassley is like complaining that the rain is too wet. He's as reliable as they come. For my part, I'll do everything I can to follow that example and uphold the gold standard that Iowans now expect from elected leaders, even if there are naysayers. It's also why I've accepted additional debates with Representative Abby Finkenauer, which she refuses to respond to. Voters deserve to make an informed decision and shouldn't question Representative Finkenauer's record in this regard rather than Senator Grassley's. Senator Grassley holds weekly media availabilities. Representative Finkenauer does not. If elected, I will work tirelessly to be a transparent servant leader on behalf of Iowans in the 1st Congressional District." That letter by Ashley Hinson of Marion. And you're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, September 21. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. This is on the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. First, from Cedar Rapids, Joan Marie Novak, age 76, died Thursday, April 30, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. A celebration of life service will be held later when all family and friends are able to attend. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From East Amana, Lorraine Norma Lipman Schmid, age 91, passed away peacefully on Saturday, September 19, at Colonial Manor of Amana. A private family graveside service will be held at East Amana Cemetery. From Cedar Rapids, Carol Marie Louise Ling, age 93, passed away on Saturday, September 19, at Cottage Grove Place Health Center, where she received wonderful care. Cremation rites have been accorded by Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services of Cedar Rapids. Interment will be at a later date at the Bethlehem Lutheran Church Cemetery in Hills, Minnesota. And from Coralville, Joseph F., also known as Joe Rowe, age 74, died Wednesday, September 16, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. A time of visitation will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, September 22, at the Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service, with the Eagles Memorial Service to be held at 5:30 p.m. Following visitation, everyone is invited to the Eagles Lodge in Iowa City for a time of refreshments and sharing of memories. From Iowa City, Jeremy D. Snyder, age 47, passed away Saturday at his home following a valiant 4-year fight against cancer. Jeremy chose to be cremated, and his family will greet friends from 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, September 24, at the Lensing Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City. And from Iowa City, Gannon Keith Zeiser, age 35, of Tucson, Arizona, formerly of Iowa City, died suddenly September 14. Visitation for family and friends will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, September 24, at the Gay and Chia Funeral Home, at 2720 Muscatine Avenue in Iowa City. Gravesite services will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, September 25, at the Unity Cemetery on Jasper Avenue near Cosgrove in Johnson County, Iowa. And from Lansing, James, also known as Jim Ronald Olson, age 88, died Saturday, September 19, at his home. A visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, September 23, at the United Methodist Church in Lansing. Funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, September 23, at the United Methodist Church in Lansing. A burial with military rites will follow at Oak Hill Cemetery, also in Lansing. The Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Lansing is assisting the family with arrangements. From Manchester, Adorine Ann Kaiser, age 86, passed away on Sunday, September 20, at Marietta's Place in Manchester. Mass of Christian burial is from 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 23, at St. Mary Catholic Church in Manchester. Visitation is from 3 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, September 22, at the Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Manchester. Friends may also call from 9 to 10 a.m. Wednesday, September 23, at the Leonard Muller Funeral Home. Interment is in St. Mary Catholic Cemetery in Manchester. And from Raleigh, John, also known as Jack Orr, age 88, passed away peacefully surrounded by his family on September 17. A visitation was held at the White Funeral Home of Independence on Sunday, September 20. A family funeral will be held at 1:30 p.m. Monday, September 21, and a graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. at the Raleigh Cemetery, followed by a celebration of life at the Raleigh Park. And from Marion, John Edward Henry, age 86, died on Sunday, September 20, at Northbrook Manor. Private family celebration of life services will be at Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids, where full military rites will be conducted. Burial will be in Linksville, Wisconsin. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, September 24, at Brosh Chapel, located at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest. The family requests everyone attending to wear a mask and practice social distancing. From Marion, Robert Charles Orend, age 74, passed away on Wednesday, September 16, at his home. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, September 22, at the Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday, September 23, at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints at 4150 Blue Jay Drive, Northeast in Cedar Rapids. Interment with military honors will take place at the Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. And in other death notices, first from Cedar Rapids, Mary F. Harker, age 89, died Sunday, September 20. The Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Central City, Kay Drury, age 75, died Sunday, September 20. The Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Central City is assisting the family. From Fayette, Kenneth J. Miller, age 94, died Thursday, September 17. The Burnham Wood Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in West Union is helping with arrangements. From Olwine, Neva Edith Miller, age 99, died Saturday, September 19. The Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home in Olwine is assisting the family. From Waukon, Richard Baumgartner, age 62, died Saturday, September 19. The Martin Grau Funeral Home in Waukon is assisting the family. Also from Waukon, William, also known as Bill P. Faring, age 81, died Thursday, September 17. The Martin Grau Funeral Home in Waukon is assisting the family. And from West Union, Lester E. Steffens, age 90, died Friday, September 18. The Burnham Wood Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in West Union is assisting the family. Turning to today's sports news, the only thing that I could find with regard to prep sports was a short piece entitled Events of Area Interest. The first is Boys Golf. Jefferson, Iowa City West, Dubuque Senior will be at Kennedy at LSGC at 3:15 p.m. City High Western Dubuque Waterloo East will be at Xavier at 3:15 p.m. Prairie Washington Dubuque Hempstead will be at Waterloo West. That's at 3:15 p.m. And Linmar Liberty Dubuque Wallard at Cedar Falls. That will be at 3:15 p.m. And in high school cross country, Liberty is at the Solon Invitational at 4:30 p.m. today. Here's your Dear Abby today. It's entitled, Friend Neglects to Mention a Man's Drug Habit. Dear Abby, my hairdresser, former neighbor and friend, recommended her unemployed brother to do some minor repairs to my home. He and his sister were trying to push me into a relationship. I'm a widow with no children. I have no mortgages, car notes, and I'm not wealthy, but I'm well set. My hairdresser recently mentioned that her brother was using crack cocaine again. I'm furious that she didn't disclose her brother's addiction sooner. Should I let it go or confront her about this? I really don't want to lose my hairdresser. And that's signed, Styled Right in the South. And Abby responds, Dear Styled, you are certainly free to ask your hairdresser why she didn't tell you her brother had a crack habit before recommending him to do repairs in your home. It's a fair question. If nothing is missing and the repairs were done properly, refrain from doing it while you are angry. If you hang on to your temper, there's no reason why your relationship with the woman should end. As to a relationship with the brother, no law says you must have one with him. You don't have to be confrontational, but be less available. As you spend more time with other people, he will get the message. Also, a story by Aaron Jordan of the Gazette staff entitled Absentee Ballots, What You Need to Know. There are many questions surrounding absentee ballots as the November 3 general election approaches. Here are some answers to help clear up confusion. Question: Why am I getting so many absentee ballot request forms? Answer: County auditors, the Iowa Secretary of State, and nonprofit groups, including the Center for Voter Information, all are sending absentee ballot request forms to encourage vote by mail during the pandemic. Political groups also want their members to vote, so they are sending out absentee ballot request forms. Question: Which one should I complete? Answer: Any ballot request form that doesn't have a pre-filled driver's license or voter ID number is legal. Johnson County Auditor Travis Wiepert recommended choosing one that goes directly to your county auditor rather than the Secretary of State's office or some other clearinghouse first. Question: I heard something about pre-filled ballot request forms being invalid. Is that true? Answer: A 6th Judicial District judge invalidated 50,000 Linn County ballot request forms last month, saying the Linn County auditor should not have pre-filled the forms with voter ID numbers. A similar ruling came down in Johnson County. But absentee ballot request forms pre-filled with other information, such as your name, address, and date of birth, are legal. Question: Do I need my voter ID number to complete an absentee ballot request form? If so, how do I get it? Answer: If you have a driver's license, you can use that number instead of a 4-digit voter ID number. You can get your voter ID by calling the county auditor. In Linn County, it's 319-892-5300. In Johnson County, it's 319-356-6004. I'll read those again. The county auditor's office number in Linn County is 319-892-5300. And in Johnson County, it's 319-356-6004. Question: Is completing more than one absentee ballot request form voter fraud? Answer: No. Even if you complete and send in multiple forms, you still will get just one ballot. Question: What is the deadline for turning in my absentee ballot request form? And the answer? Forms must be received by your county auditor by 5 p.m. on August 24. Question: When will I get my absentee ballot? Answer: Auditors will start sending out absentee ballots October 5. Question: What's the deadline for returning my absentee ballot? Absentee ballots received in the county auditor's office by the time the polls close November 3 are eligible for counting. Ballots received after the polls close must be postmarked by November 2 and received in the county auditor's office no later than November 9. Question: How can I know if my absentee ballot request was received or my completed absentee ballot was received? Answer: You can check the status of your absentee ballot through the Iowa Secretary of State's Absentee Ballot Tracker. That's sos.iowa.gov/elections/absentee ballot status. Again, that's sos.iowa.gov/elections/absentee ballot status. You'll just need to enter your name and birthday. Question: If I get an absentee ballot but decide I don't want to mail it, what should I do? Voted absentee ballots not returned by mail before Election Day may be delivered to the county auditor's office before the polls close. Voted absentee ballots cannot be returned, cannot be turned in at polling places, but you may surrender your voted absentee ballot at the polls and vote a regular ballot. If you've lost the absentee ballot mailed to you, you can vote a provisional ballot at the polls. And from today's community page, Cultivating Matches, Grants Help Tiffin School Area Projects Promote Wellness, a story by Diana Nolan of the Gazette staff. A new classroom is on the grow at Clear Creek Amana Middle School in Tiffin, thanks to student, faculty, and community partnerships. And now it's moving closer to completion, fueled by a $13,583 Wellmark Foundation Matching Assets to Community Health grant to help finance an outdoor learning center this school year, projected to cost around $35,000. It's one of 28 projects in Iowa receiving funds in varying amounts, contingent upon receiving a 50% match by November 6 through a combination of in-kind donations or services in cash. All of the projects are designed to encourage physical activity or access to nutritious foods, ranging from the Smokestack Vehicle-Free Bridge in Cedar Rapids to an inclusive playground update in Durant and trail enhancements in Washington County. The Clear Creek Amana classroom will fulfill both requirements by augmenting activity and nutrition, not only for students across the district, but also for the community as a space for club meetings, yoga classes, or master gardener involvement. Local businesses, the National FFA, Backyard Abundance, and AmeriCorps also have been instrumental in funding and designing the project. The public can make donations as well at ccaschools.org/page/5485. The whole perspective of an outdoor classroom is to provide students the opportunity to explore outdoor learning, said Alyssa Amelon, the Agriculture Education FFA teacher for the middle and high schools. The outdoor learning space is going to provide an outdoor exposure, and the teachers are going to be able to enhance their lessons to provide real-world application. Students already have had a hand in designing the focus areas, which are ADA compliant and will include a learning shelter, an activity shelter, a contemplation nook, a fern gully, and a separate sensory study area for studying biodiversity and vegetable and fruit gardens. After contractors pour the concrete, various classes will be involved in building the structures and planting and maintaining the landscape and gardens. Students also will research the growing process to determine what plants to grow and how to obtain and nurture them. The goal isn't to feed the school district, Amelon said, but by working with the school's food service, students may be able to try out something new to them, like Brussels sprouts. She hopes to have the first harvest from the gardens in May, and with the help of FFA students and perhaps 4-H clubs, begin harvesting through the summer. Learning is the key to turning an inviting outdoor space into a classroom, and middle school STEM teacher Reagan Bosett, who began brainstorming ideas with Emelon in the fall of 2018. We started thinking outside the box on ways to get students out of the four walls of school and learn by doing, Emelon said. So many of our students really benefit from actually getting their hands dirty and working. We can talk about things in the classroom and project them all we want, but until a student really engages, the learning doesn't necessarily take place. For Bosett, form, function, and engineering are paramount in creating this learning environment. Obviously, it's beautiful, but it's useful, and I think that every piece of the design has some function to it, Bosett said. We have places that are specifically made for calming places, and we have places that are made for edible gardens. The biggest thing is, it's not just space. It's not just a chair. It's not just a picnic table. It's been designed to be educational because of its use. She also hopes to help teachers design ways to incorporate the Learning Center into their curriculum, so it will be more than just a pretty place. Now we just take breaks for fresh air and a little vitamin D, but if we're intentional about why we're using the outdoor piece for a particular lesson or certain groupings of students, it comes together then as part of the lesson, part of the learning, Bosett said. And while her focus is on STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, the outdoor classroom will offer all students what she said is at the core of education, applicable problem solving. I don't even care what subject it's in. It's all about teaching kids, empowering them to realize they can problem solve and navigate any part of the world, but they don't know they can, she said. With this outdoor space, allowing them to design and be a part of that empowers them to realize they can change quite literally the face of the earth by changing the landscape. She also envisions students helping to shape guidelines for community usage of the space. By working with the school board or the city, they can see that multiple steps and input go into making decisions, she said. Emelon added, we're hoping community members seek out this opportunity to relax on the walking trail, smell the flowers as they might go by, and really observe student work at its finest. The following Eastern Iowa projects also are receiving Wellmark Match grants. For more information, go to the newsroom tab at wellmark.com/foundation. ConnectCR Incorporated gets $25,000. In Coralville, $25,000 goes to Trailhead Plaza at Creekside Park in Coralville. And the Durant PTO gets $24,000 for an inclusive playground update. La Porte City gets $25,000 for Lions Park Ball Diamond renovation. And Sigourney, $25,000 for pickleball shuffleboard courts. And Victor gets $17,365.89 for Waterworks Park. Washington County gets $25,000 for Key Wash trail paving and enhancements. Here's your Eastern Iowa briefs for today. From Dubuque, the National Mississippi River and Aquarium is to offer free virtual programs this fall. The National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium is offering free live virtual programs this fall on a variety of behind-the-scenes topics. The programs will begin Tuesday at 7 p.m. and take place select Tuesdays through November 10. Topics covered in the four-part series include Flex Your Muscles, that's M-U-S-S-E-L-S, that's Tuesday, highlighting the important role muscles play in river habitats and how to save these animals from extinction. Next is the Day in the Life of a Keeper, that's October 6, featuring a river museum keeper and discussing a keeper's day-to-day work, how keepers care for the river museum's more than 2,000 animals, and how they got started in the field. Next is Dust to Dust, Victorian's Obsession with Death. That's on October the 20th. And a follow-up to the Ham Sites Linwood Legacies exhibit. This program will feature death and burial practices of the Victorian era, including hair art and funeral fashion. And then, Animal Misunderstandings. That's November the 10th. Exploring misconceptions of a few unique animals in the River Museum's collection, as well as myths associated with them. Each program includes a half hour of content about 15 minutes for questions. Registration is required for each program and can be completed by visiting rivermuseum.com/virtual-programs. Following registration, participants will receive a link on the scheduled program provided on the Zoom platform. After the program, a follow-up email will be sent with a link of the program recording in the event the registrant was unable to watch it live. Each program is limited to 100 participants, and while programs are provided free of charge, donations will be accepted to offset the cost of these programs and to support future free programming. Also in Eastern Iowa Brief, virtual storytime event featuring Miss Iowa starts at 10 a.m. today. The reigning Miss Iowa, Emily Tinsman, will give a musical rendition of the classic story, There Was an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly, for COVID Recovery Iowa's Tell Me a Story, a virtual story time for Iowans of all ages. The pre-recorded video will first air at 10 a.m. today on the Tell Me a Story Facebook page and on the COVID Recovery Iowa YouTube channel. It can be accessed at any time that fits a person's schedule after the first airing. The Bettendorf native, who was crowned Miss Iowa in June 2019, is a graduate of Drake University and is a music teacher in the Des Moines Public School System. She is just one of many well-known Iowans, along with the COVID Recovery Iowa staff, who will read pre-recorded stories to help Iowa kids and their families cope during the COVID-19 pandemic and in the aftermath of the derecho. Tell Me a Story sessions also will include stories for bilingual children and families. COVID Recovery Iowa is administered by the Iowa Department of Human Services and is for all Iowans who have been impacted in any way by the COVID-19 pandemic or the derecho. In addition to support groups, activities, and resources, COVID Recovery Iowa offers free confidential virtual counseling to all Iowans. For more information, go to covidrecoveryiowa.org. And our pet of the week is Rin. Rin is a 12-year-old spayed female cat who's available for adoption at the Cedar Valley Humane Society at 7411 Mount Vernon Road Southeast. She is used to a calm home with plenty of places for her to climb and lounge around on and enjoys being the center of attention. The shelter is open by appointment only. Call 319-362-6288 for more information. Here are a couple of notes from the Crime Blotter. Police are seeking tips after an Iowa City shooting injures a woman. Police are seeking the public's help to identify anyone involved in a shooting that injured a woman Sunday morning. At about 9:55 a.m., officers responded to a report of a gunshot in the 100 block of Oak Crest Street, according to an Iowa City Police Department news release. There, they found a woman with a gunshot wound. She was taken to a hospital for treatment. Police said there is no indication the public is at risk. No arrests have been made, and the investigation is ongoing. Anyone with information is urged to contact Sergeant Jerry Blomgren at 319-356-5276. Iowa City Crime Stoppers is offering a reward of up to $1,000 for information if an arrest is made. And also, a body is found in Central Iowa Ditch, spurring a homicide inquiry. Authorities in rural central Iowa have opened a homicide investigation after officials responding to a fire in a roadside ditch found a body there. Officials were called around 5:30 p.m. Wednesday for a fire in a ditch near Kellogg, the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigations said in a news release. Officials responded and quickly extinguished the flames, then found the body. The identity of the victim has not yet been released, and police also have not been given any information on how the person died, but say they are treating the death as a homicide. Police ask anyone with information on the death to contact investigators. Also, vote-by-mail pleas are jamming mailboxes. This is an article by Aaron Jordan of the Gazette staff. Is your mailbox jammed with absentee ballot request forms and you don't know which one to fill out and send in? You're not alone. In the past weeks, we keep getting so many, said Anna Jimenez, age 31, of Iowa City. Some are addressed to me, some to my husband. Some just say current resident. It's getting so old. The Iowa Secretary of State, county auditors, and nonprofit groups like the Center for Voter Information are sending absentee ballot request forms in advance of the November 3 election to try to increase voter participation. Political groups are getting into the act, too, with the Republican National Committee sending ballot request forms to Eastern Iowans who respond to a text message, officials said. Vote at home has become the big thing because of COVID right now, Johnson County Auditor Travis Wiepert said. Every group wants to make sure their members get out to vote. The forms showing up in mailboxes are not ballots, but forms needed to request absentee ballots. A voter who wishes to vote absentee needs to complete the form and send it in to receive an absentee ballot. Iowa judges have said that pre-filled forms that list a voter's driver's license number or four-digit voter ID number are invalid. But if the form has just other information, including name, address, date of birth, it is legal and can be completed by a would-be voter, Wiepert said. The best ones to send are ones that go directly to the auditor's office. If you mailed those to the Secretary of State, they will probably be mailed back to the auditor. Even if people complete and submit more than one form, they will still get just one absentee ballot, Wiepert said. Turning in more than one request form isn't voter fraud. Several Gazette readers said on Facebook that getting multiple forms in the mail made them question whether they could be confident their vote would be counted in the November election. After you get two, three, or four, it makes me feel like you can't trust mail-in voting, Jimenez said. If I have to wear five masks and a face shield, it seems like it's better to take time to vote in person. But Wiepert and Linn County Auditor Joel Miller said absentee voting has worked in past elections and ballots can be tracked by voters. People who submit their absentee ballot request forms will get a ballot in the mail after October 5, when early voting starts in Iowa, Wiepert said. The completed ballot can be sent back through the mail and tracked at the Secretary of State's website with the voter's name and date of birth. If for some reason the ballot doesn't show up in the online database closer to November 3, county auditors can void the absentee ballot and a voter can go to the polls in person, Wiepert said. Registered voters also can vote in person starting October 5 at designated early voting sites. In Linn County, early voting will be available curbside near the Linn County Public Service Center at 823 3rd Street Southwest in Cedar Rapids, or starting October 6 in the Lindale Mall Food Court. Johnson County early voting can be done walk-up or drive-through in the county parking ramp at 855 South Dubuque Street. To vote in person, people should bring an ID with their current address or another document that confirms a new address, Miller said. For people displaced by the derecho, the address they intend to reside at is acceptable, he said. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. For today, that's Monday, September 21. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website at iowaradioreading.org at any time. And thanks for listening.